So hi, everybody. Welcome to our next episode of Final Cuts by BVS Film Productions. Today we have our friend Dean Clark. He is the founder of Found Studios out of Santa Clarita, California. Does that sound right?
Yeah, basically it's Los Angeles North.
Los Angeles North. Okay. And if you're watching the video, don't mind my shirt. For some reason, it is bouncing all over the place. I look like I have a humpback and then it goes away. So we'll have to deal with that. All right. So, Dean, you know, we've talked in the past. You know, tell me a little bit about yourself to, you know, tell our audience what you do. And let's start there.
Sure. Well, my company is called Found Studios. And it's the reason it was called Found Studios is I have this crazy backstory, and we can get into it. As I don't want to hit everything right now, but
yeah,
I researched my backstory a little bit if you get a chance. But foundstudios.com, and we basically are a full service marketing agency who now has just launched into CMO services, so Chief Marketing Officer services. And I know a lot of people that view this are into video. Just about every project we do has a video component. And one of my philosophies is we have the privilege of being a part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
And we fully understand we're not the process, right? We do, but we get sometimes this amazing front row seat of being a part of a journey that your company is on. And we are just there to serve and to provide maybe a greater level of skill in some areas that most people don't have in-house.
Got it. Okay, great. So this is the interesting part. You know, when we talked last time, you had a really great story. Tell us how you got started in this business and some of the interesting people that you dealt with.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. So I started, well, my backstory, and I'll just give a little touch of it. So I was a handicapped baby, no mom, no dad, mystery father. So this poor gal in LA gets pregnant, signs all this paperwork to get rid of me, but then I'm born 3 months premature. So I literally had no parents. I was just in a hospital, half of it in an incubator for 13 months. And so miraculously, I get delivered. So Found is literally my story, as well as a lot of my customer's story, right? So the Clark, my last name is the family that rescued me.
Wow.
And so at 13 months, I was finally, I guess, healthy enough. They didn't expect me to even live, but I was healthy enough to be placed in a foster care. And so I miraculously got placed in the Clark house and was able to immediately walk. And I had a tracheotomy. So, you know, the tube in your throat. So I was a trach baby for 6-7 years.
Whoa.
And so get miraculously healed in the Clark home. They want to adopt me. Life's going to be great. And my biological mom, the one that gave me up 9 years earlier, comes back in and rips me away from my safe environment.
Wow.
And so I moved from, for the older people in the audience, I went from Ozzie and Harriet. Do you remember Ozzie and Harriet show?
I do, yes.
Yeah, I went from Ozzie and Harriet to Ozzy Osbourne. Okay,
oh,
so
man,
totally safe, like, you know, amazing people to absolute lunacy, crazy dysfunction,
yeah.
And luckily I survived it. So sadly, by 11, I was on drugs. By 13, arrested for dealing drugs, and by 14, living with my mafia drug dealer.
Whoa.
Figure, right? So
yeah.
Entire year, ninth grade. I don't know what you were doing in ninth grade. I was living with the mafia.
Oh, man.
I'd even had a mafia nickname. It was like, hey, Dizzy, come over here, Dizzy.
What?
Like, hey, forget about it. So I'm literally living with this guy, John. It's like this guy right out of New York City or Buffalo, New York. And it was this whole drug dealing family.
Wow.
Sir knew about it, but the sister was the main drug dealer. So we were kids. I was in middle school. There was high school kids involved. And then we were part of this like ring, almost like Oliver, if you know that movie.
Yes.
Like
more food, please.
Pockets.
Yeah. I remember that.
So I don't know if I was the Artful Dodger. I don't know if I was Oliver. I don't know which character I was, but it was crazy. And I was lucky I survived.
Wow.
The next year, and this, you know, there's a reason for this. the next year I'm in Hollywood, and mom is living with her new ex-con boyfriend. So mom still is making some interesting choices. And I move in what is today, in today's money, a $2 million house. Poor kid from the foster care from the other side of the tracks. I'm now living in the equivalent of Beverly Hills, up in the Hollywood Hills. And it's called, for LA people, anybody listening, it's Nichols Canyon. It's Mount Olympus. Those areas are kind of famous in Hollywood. And so I'm living up in this amazing house, and mom still can't do normal things. So I'm getting up and I'm hitchhiking to school. Wow. What kid, small middle schooler, like is hit or high schooler is hitchhiking? I don't
know. Yeah, man.
So first day of school, I meet this long haired rock and roll guy. I also had long hair, was into like rock and roll. And I walk up to this rocker at Fairfax High School. And for those history, rock and roll history buffs, Fairfax was the center of the rock and roll universe in the 80s. Motley Crue came from Fairfax, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Guns N' Roses, and LA Guns. So there's these famous bands and some famous punk bands. I don't know if anybody's in with that. So I get immediately, you know, welcomed into the druggy rocker scene. And I meet this long haired rocker guy. And he goes, I go, what do you do? And he goes, oh, I'm in a band. I'm like, cool. And he goes, where do you live? And I go, I live in the Hollywood Hills. He goes, dude, I live in the Hollywood Hills. Come on up to my house. So get this. I take my little moped up through the winding streets of the Hollywood Hills to a $4.5 million house.
What?
That's in today's money, right? So picture this amazing house on stilts hanging out over the cliff over famous Mulholland Drive with the entire valley spread out before you. Wow. And, you know, this kid from the bad side of the tracks, right? Like, I mean, this is amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And so I get walked down this stone paver hallway. To give you an idea how epic this hallway is, it had 13 French doors.
Whoa.
13 doors side by side. All the whole hallway was doors, all leading down this to this oak paneled office. And there's the rocker kid that I just met. He's got his beautiful star body guitar and his drummers there. I'm like, yeah, rock and roll, sign me up. So we become instant best friends. And this guy literally changed my life. So in good ways and bad ways, right? So I become, again, since my life was always in flux, I went to two of every school, two elementary, two middle school, two high school, and two colleges.
Yeah.
So it's always needing to meet new people. And it's probably why I'm so gregarious today. You know, I've always been thrust as the new guy and the person with no friends and the outsider. So I use my humor and personality to kind of get in there and mix it up and meet friends.
Yeah.
So now I'm at Fairfax High School, and the next year we're poor again. So the guy, mom's new boyfriend, sells the gorgeous house and moves us right back to the barrio where we came from.
Find
bathroom gangs and graffiti and poverty. And we're like, oh man, really? I couldn't be rich for more than a minute. Are you serious right now? And so I go, and so the next year I'm at the poor kid's school in the valley. And for anybody listening to this as an LA person, I was at Poly High. So I went from Fairfax High to Poly High. And I'm living in North Hollywood by Sun Valley. Sun Valley is bad. So I'm on the border of a really bad area.
Yeah.
And I'm in a not great area. So this, take your pick. And so I get a call. And it's Chris, my buddy Chris from Hollywood, going, dude, I started a band. Okay. Drives to the valley. I grab my camera. And the band is Guns N' Roses. So my best friend was the lead guitarist in Guns N' Roses before Slash.
Wow.
So Slash is the famous guy that made $100 million, right? So my buddy is the, not so much, right? Like he made a lot of money with the band. He became a rock star later, like 20 years later, huge number 5 hit song on the Billboard charts. So don't feel sorry for him. He's had an incredible career.
Right.
And now he's sober. I'm super proud of him. Yeah. I've been sober for 35 years. He's been sober for about 22 years. And he's now married with a kid, and he's a licensed child family therapist.
Wow.
Something people know about issues. And so,
oh, yeah.
So in 12th grade, he drives to pick me up. I grab my camera and I become the very first photographer for Guns N' Roses.
Oh, how cool.
And I take these historic photos that nobody else has. And so consequently, when they tell the story of Guns N' Roses, they use my photo in Rolling Stone magazine and coffee table books. And so my stories and my photos have traveled all over the world. And they're in various publications. And here's the crazy part. In 2018, some artist at, I think, Deadline or Cinderella Records reaches down into the vault, pulls my photo out, and makes it the album cover.
Oh, the very first
Guns N' Roses album.
Wow.
And ask me how much money they sent me.
Uh-oh.
Not a cent, thank you very much. I'm the only person that is not cashed in any way on the Guns N' Roses Association. So,
hey,
but you know what? I use the story as kind of a lead-in for transformation, right? I don't care if people think I'm a cool rocker or have this cool story. I'm about telling people how God changed my life, how I got sober, and then how my business can then transform their situation. There's a lot of hurting people out there, right? Both in business and in life. And I'm in this case study, almost like the train wreck that you could see on the car wreck, right?
Yeah,
the rubbernecking, right? Like I just can't take my eyes off it. So my story is part train car wreck, part Forrest Gump weirdness. And the reason my brother was the first person to coin the Forrest Gump thing.
Yeah.
And because at one point during the 90s, I kid you not, I was a part of all the major news stories all at the same time. So I lived with Guns N' Roses. They become the number one band in the world.
So you live with them for how long?
Oh, yeah. I didn't even tell you that part. So I take the photo in 12th grade. I graduate from high school in 1984. And yes, I'm an old person. Sorry. And so I graduate from high school. And right around that time, my mom goes, "You're out. You're 18 years old. Get out." So the crazy mom that took me from the safety of the Clarks has now and allowed me to hitchhike in Hollywood, live with the mafia, and everything else that she did in amazing skills, amazing parent skills that she had. Now I'm 18. She's like, "Get out." And right around that time, I get a call from Hollywood, and it's my best buddy, Chris, who his parents let him drop out of high school, take the test, drop out of high school at 17, start a rock band, Guns N' Roses, and they gave him the equivalent of a $1 million cabin in the Hollywood Hills.
Wow.
Can't even call it a house. It was a cabin. I mean, this thing, straight out of a movie, this thing is a hippie cabin, handcrafted, like the craziest place ever. Wow. And so I'm going to be homeless, right? I don't have a job. I don't have any way of supporting myself. I mean, this is so crazy. And I move in sight unseen into the Guns N' Roses party house.
Man.
And it's basically me and people like at this point, they go, "Dude, did you have like cool hair and tattoos and leather and piercings?" And I'm like, "No, I look just like this."
Welcome to the jungle.
Yeah. So I was like the normal new waiver kid moving in with the heavy metalers. The glam rockers, right?
Wow.
And you know what? I believe, though, as lame as that sounds, God used that to protect me from the worst of what was happening in my home.
Oh, really?
Can you imagine what was happening in a home filled with rockers and their hooker girlfriends and heroin and all the rest of it?
Yeah.
And for some reason, I was able to live in the house and not be exposed to the worst of it. And luckily, I came out of that house a few years later, not a drug addict. And this kind of segues to the next part. So I'm living with the band. Now I'm really a mess, right? So I've now dropped out of college.
Yeah.
I'm on drugs. I'm an idiot and I'm going nowhere fast. I get a job at a luggage store at Hollywood and Vine. You know, when people say they were discovered in Hollywood, I was literally discovered at the corner of Hollywood and Vine.
Oh, really?
And for anybody that's listening that's not from Los Angeles, Hollywood and Vine, Google it. It's a famous intersection where Capitol Records, so the building that's the symbol of Hollywood is at Hollywood and Vine. It looks like a stack of records, right?
Right, right.
So there's Capitol Records on one corner. There's the Pantages right behind Capitol Records, which is amazing. And then across the street from that is the Taft Building, which is now surrounded by the W Hotel, which is where all the movie stars stay, and it's a really fancy hotel. And then across the street from that is a historic building called the Broadway. And it used to be a Broadway department store, and it's also amazing and historical. So, but that's not me, right? Not me yet. I am at the scuzzy little luggage store right next to all these historic buildings.
Yeah.
And it's dirty and it's nasty and it's been there forever. And I'm just a salesman on the shop floor trying to sell luggage and briefcases. And I call these divine appointments. It's when God shows up and everything changes. So here I am, college dropout, no connections, living with rockers, and working at a pretty nasty job. Okay.
Yeah, right.
So this senior vice, I'm 20, so I've now survived almost 2 years living with the bad boys of rock and roll. So a 27-year-old superstar walks into my luggage store and he mentions Cal State Northridge Career Center. I'm like, that, a divine appointment, right?
Yeah.
I go, I got this job. You ready for this? Mm-hmm. I got this job at the Cal State Northridge Career Center. The same place that this 27-year-old just left.
Whoa.
And somehow he ends up in my luggage store. I'm like, this is crazy, right? This is not humanly possible without God intervening. Mm-hmm. And I go, what were you doing there? He goes, oh, I placed an ad for a runner. I go, dude, do you want to use the phone? He goes, why? I go, to cancel the ad. You just found your runner. And he looks at me, and this is like Elon Musk walking into 7-Eleven and hiring the drug-addicted cashier.
Oh, my gosh.
And this senior vice president looks at me and goes, you're hired.
Yeah.
And little did I know that this would literally be the reason we're speaking today. It's the reason I'm wearing a suit. It's the reason I have a home and a marriage of 32 years and two amazing adult kids at 27 and 30. Everything I was blessed with through this one encounter.
Wow.
Right? Because, I mean, I was going nowhere fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And so 2 weeks later, I show up in borrowed clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't own a suit. So I've like borrowed my buddy. He's way bigger than me. And so I come in all floppy, you know, like in floppy clothes that don't fit, and a horrible tie that I've never worn a tie before.
Mm-hmm.
And the boss takes one look at me and goes, oh my gosh, what in the heck is that? And the boss, so get this, the job is commercial real estate. This billionaire, he's now a billionaire owner of high-rise buildings in New York City, Manhattan. How rich do you got to be to own a high rise in Manhattan? He owned a bunch of them. Okay. Right. Uh-huh. And he would go into major cities all around the country and he would buy historic high rise buildings. Hollywood had two of them side by side.
Yeah.
The Taft Building and the Broadway. So he would, his motive was to go to a city, hire the hot shot guy of the town, and go into partnership sort of with them and renovate, do a historical renovation build of these buildings and then lease them up.
Oh, man.
So I have no idea about any of this. I'm just like, hire me. I'm an idiot.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So 2 weeks later, he gives me the equivalent of a six-figure job. You can't make this up.
Wow.
I am a drug addict. He could have paid me 5 cents.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me the equivalent of a six-figure job, a secretary that looked like Whitney Houston, this beautiful supermodel, and my own office and my own 12-story building.
What?
I have my own high-rise at 20.
Wow.
You can't make it up.
No.
And I'm still living with the drug addicts. I'm still living with the band, right? I haven't escaped yet. So, and so one of the crazy taglines that I use is dot, 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 but God had a plan.
Yeah.
When everything looks bleak and hopeless, and this goes for you as well, right?
Yeah.
When the world is calling you out, when the world is saying that you're done, your career's over, right?
Mm-hmm.
God has a plan. right? Like, don't count anything out. There is a greater thing at work. And the other thing that I like to tell people is the thing is not the thing. The thing that you think you're doing right now may have nothing to do with the thing, the journey that you're on.
I've right? seen that before. So, yeah.
Correct. Like, what, like for you, what did you start out as a video guy? You know, I mean, like,
yeah, I want to be a rock star like everybody else.
There you go. See,
I had my fun too, but not quite to that level. You know,
right?
Being college fun, I guess. Lessons learned.
Yeah, and so I started out in commercial real estate. I thought I was for sure going to be a billionaire mogul in Hollywood, and all indications seemed to be pointing that way.
Yeah,
get that. This guy Rob Langer, I'll say his name because he's amazing. He's like still my buddy 37 years later. So Rob Langer and I were the golden boys of Hollywood. We closed 200,000 square feet of deals.
Wow.
That is the equivalent of a high-rise building.
Yeah.
A big high-rise
building. Yeah, yeah, right.
And so multiple millions and millions of dollars of deals.
Uh-huh.
I didn't make myself rich. I made Rob rich. Like, he's 27 years old, and the first thing we did is go and find him a house in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And so really incredible, and he deserves everything that's coming to him. He's was super generous in seeing something in me that I sure didn't even know existed, right? And I could say the same thing for God. Like, God saw something in me that was so dormant from all the stupid decisions and buried under these layers and layers and layers of horrible outcomes and consequences, right?
Life lessons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So eventually, so as I'm becoming more successful and the money's starting to roll in, I'm just doing stupid. What happens when you give a drug addict a lot of money? I mean, it's just...
yeah.
Right?
They live or they die.
So eventually, things got really bad in the Guns N' Roses house, and I ended up in another apartment.
Yeah.
Okay? And somehow we ended up with the Guns N' Roses couches. I don't even know how or why. But somehow we ended up with some of the furniture.
Yeah.
And so I'm living in Burbank, which is a neighboring city to Hollywood. And I'm just going nowhere fast, right? Even though I look good on the outside, I'm just a hopeless moron on nights and weekends, living for Friday night and doing stupid all week, and then hopefully coming to work on Monday all hungover and drugged out, or you know, drug hungover.
Yeah.
And so... right around that time, do you remember all the 80s movies that were about body switching?
Yes.
There was Freaky Friday, Mom and Daughter, right? There was 18 Again, I think with George Burns, and he switches places. There was another movie with Judd Reinhold and Fred Savage where they switch places.
Yeah.
I forget what that, Vice Versa, I think it was called.
Yeah.
And then there was my movie. It was called like Father Like Son. And it was Dudley Moore and Kirk Cameron. This was This was the year before Kirk Cameron got his act together.
Yeah.
And so here I am, short, funny guy in a suit, Dean Moore at the time. My name was Dean Moore, watching Dudley Moore, short, funny guy in a suit on the big screen.
Yeah.
Where on the outside, he's a surgeon in a suit, but on the inside, he's a 16-year-old idiot. And in that movie theater, God spoke to me and said, that's you. And I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, I'd grown up with the Clarks. I knew how far I had fallen, right? I knew it. I knew I had that imposter syndrome, right? Where everybody is telling me how great I am at work, right? I got my name on a building. I'm killing it. We're doing deals. All this stuff is happening. I'm getting all these kudos. And at home, at nights and weekends, I'm doing everything to destroy my health and my life and the trust that these people had placed in me.
Yeah.
I have a real job, right? Like, I got real responsibilities and quotas.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there was a quota back then, but you know what I mean? There's money that's expected to come from my effort.
Right, right, right.
So I felt God tell me in that movie theater, I gave you a miracle birth, 2.5 pounds, shouldn't have survived. I gave you a miracle family, the Clarks, and a miracle career. And look what a piece of garbage your life is. So I go home and I announce, again, I'm living with more druggy partying people.
Yeah.
And a good guy. I'm not trashing him at all. I love this guy. But, you know, we're 20s. We're partying.
Yeah, you do what you do.
So I announced at a party that I'm going clean. Cold turkey, right? And I'm on everything. And you know, partiers hate that.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right? Like, you know, when you're at a party and you announce to everybody you're going sober.
It's like not a leper.
Right. Yeah, you become a leper. Yeah, you become like a buzzkill. Yeah. And so people that were never generous with their drugs normally become really generous with their drugs when you're trying to get sober. Yeah. Like, here, try this. You're like, I just told you 2 minutes ago I want to get sober.
Yeah.
And you're trying to lure me back in. And one of the examples I give, I don't know if you've heard about crabs, right? And you could have a bucket of crabs.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute one tries to escape, the other crabs will pull them down into the bucket. And they'll all die together.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
and I really think of that house I lived in and the drug scene and the party scene are like these crabs that whenever somebody starts to stick their head out and go, you know what, this is stupid. I'm literally destroying my life. I'm a total blow it. And all the other crabs are like grabbing their pant legs and dragging them back down.
Yeah.
And so thank God, look at the miracle. ... But God had a plan.
Nice.
I come home from my real estate job and my roommate has moved out and taken all the furniture, including the Guns N' Roses couches, including the mattress that he loaned me.
Oh, man.
He left my sorry butt sleeping on the carpet, right? This is how much he cared about me. He's like, he didn't say, hey, dude, you want to buy the extra mattress? He's like, no, I'm just leaving you on the floor. Gone.
Oh,
right?
Man.
So I've left sleeping on the carpet with no furniture, no fridge, no stove. He felt bad about that. And so he actually helped me get a fridge and stove later.
Yeah, yeah.
I was little. I had no place to store my... So
McDonald's.
You know the word. You know the word adulting. You've heard that.
Sort of. No. What's it?
Well, adulting is what we ask young adults to do, like adults, grown people do, and it's like a become kind of a funny term, right? Because there's a lot of people who've never done adult yet. You know,
right.
So me, I was like successful guy, had a killer job, and never bought furniture. I'd never done any adulting, and so I was very quickly forced into that. And so I'm alone. Mm-hmm. I have no friends now. All the friends had left the ship. And this is before cell phones. So I had to be home to get this phone call. So the phone rings, I pick it up. It's the mafia kid I lived with 6 years earlier.
Oh.
So we are the same age.
Yeah.
And he goes, hey, I wonder if you can help me out. I go, what? He goes, I'm looking for a place to live. I'm standing in an empty room talking to this guy on the phone. I go, yeah? He goes, but there's a problem. I have a whole house full of furniture.
Nah. Wow.
So literally, furniture bought by Guns N' Roses is replaced by furniture bought by the mafia. You can't make this up, right? If you put it in a movie, nobody would believe it.
Yeah, right.
Luckily, I have actually historical evidence of everything I said.
Nice.
And so my story is actually a website. You can go and Google it.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Google Dean Clark, Found Studios, Guns N' Roses, and my whole story with photos and everything will come up.
Oh, that's awesome.
But don't do it right now. Listen for a minute.
There's more. Wait, there's more.
So this guy, so you know what? Like, how bad was that as a decision? Like, I want to get sober. I bring my drug dealer back into the home.
Yeah.
I lose one drug deal, I get another drug deal. I mean, the whole thing is dumb. Yeah. But God had a plan, right? So that guy was on his way to becoming sober, multi-millionaire, wonderful guy, got his act together, way beyond me. Mm-hmm. And there's a biblical term called iron sharpening iron.
Yes.
So when we have people in our lives, in our businesses, that are sharper than us, as our iron blade comes up against somebody that's sharper than us, we become sharp.
Yes.
Same thing is true. If we're hanging around people that are dull and not doing the right things, kind of like the crabs in the bucket, right?
Yeah.
Our blade is getting duller and duller and duller.
Right.
So pretty soon it's a butter knife. Okay. And so,
true.
I meet this guy who's just, oh my gosh, he's an entrepreneurial beast and he's just got his act together. So eventually he introduces me to a girl that drags me to this Christian church. And finally, after all these years, God reaches down officially and pulls me out of the mud. And I tell people that we all have a God-shaped hole in our lives. And some people come to where I'm at from a down and out story, right? Yeah. They hit rock bottom, they're a drug addict, and they've lost their home, their life, that, you know, and they call out to God from a gutter.
Yeah.
I was the opposite. I was a down and up story, right? Like,
not right. Yeah.
You know, I was calling out to God from very successful. Mm-hmm. And what I tell people is that this God-shaped hole is infinite in our lives. And you can take all the money, trophy wife, trophy husband, beautiful car, house, job, money, and you can throw it into this Grand Canyon size hole, and it doesn't even leave a dent.
Yes.
And why are the most beautiful people in the world the most miserable? Why are the most famous people in the world the most miserable? Why are the billionaires miserable? Why? Because they've achieved everything. And in a minor way, I had achieved everything mm-hmm. at 20-something years old, 21 years old, yeah. that the world says was going to be amazing and going to make you fulfilled. And, you know, and then it was like that imposter syndrome, right? Where you're just like,
yeah.
people really knew me, right? They'd know yeah. what a fraud I am. And this is all a joke and it's all a facade.
Right, right. Wow.
So that's how God kind of delivered me. Mm-hmm. And I turned my life over to God through Christ, invited him into that God-shaped hole. And I was forever different. That's wow. 35 years.
Yeah.
Almost to the day. You ready really? For that? Yeah. It was June 8th. So June 8th of 88, God reached down into the muck and pulled me out.
Wow. Wow. That is so cool.
And so get this. June 8th, 1988 was also the very day that Guns N' Roses hit number one in the world.
Wow.
Their song Sweet Child of Mine hit number one, and yeah. their lives were forever changed.
Yes.
They went
yes.
from obscurity to global phenoms, right?
Yeah.
And so I tell people they became number one, but I met number one personally.
Yeah.
And yeah. look at the tragedy surrounding that band. They're on top right now. They're doing pretty well, but mm-hmm. they can't sing. Like Axl can't like sing. Before. It's just a tragedy. He's more of a comic than he is a rock star. Slash is a freak of nature where he's not aged at all and yeah. he still plays as incredibly as he did.
Yeah.
So he's the one guy that actually Duff too, the bass player and the guitar player are both incredible. Wow. Izzy, that's so cool. who was in the band when the famous photo that I took, it features Izzy mm-hmm. and Axl and Chris. So Izzy actually got out in 92.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't stand the drugs and he got free. And I think he's doing well now. I mean, he's just mm-hmm. retired as a globally famous billionaire or whatever he is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He got out of the rock and roll game forever ago.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God he did. He might have died, right?
Oh, right, right.
So I'm really thankful. I'm really glad I got to meet him. Of all the people back in my those days, I would probably hang out with him again.
Yeah.
Chris and I did renew our friendship.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's how I was able to get all the photos.
Oh, you still am.
I took these photos at 84 mm-hmm. and I was so poor and broke back then. I would give the film canister to whoever I took the photos for.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't afford to develop films. Yeah. I didn't get the negatives. I didn't get the prints and I didn't know if the photos were good or bad or indifferent.
So right. Right. Wow.
I would just toss that to somebody and go, there you go. I did my job. Well, get this. The film was good. The pictures were good. Yeah. They went into a photo album in 1984 and stayed there until 2000.
Wow.
And that's when I rediscovered them. Mm-hmm. I bring my scanner in and I get all the photos back.
Nice.
Right? Like I get all the photos back. And that's right when the world discovers the photos, discovers the original EP.
Yes.
That's my album cover. And so it was really interesting how I've been telling this story forever with no photographic proof.
Yeah. Now you have.
And finally in 2000, guy goes, you want photographic proof? I'm going to put you in Rolling Stone magazine and give you an album cover and give you all these photos.
Wow.
So
cool.
Anyways, but let's talk about, well, you do you have any questions about that? And I'll
ask. So if we So from there, at what point did you start your current agency now?
Sure. So so I meet my wife 2 years after I get sober, and we've been married 32 years. And a few years after that, I get a job selling color printers. And these aren't just any color printers. They're Tektronix, which then became Xerox.
Yeah.
They're the Lamborghini of printers.
Right. I remember them.
Remember I told you how I was part of all these Forrest Gump historical moments.
Yeah.
I happen to be selling colored printers in West LA, right near Brentwood, on Bundy Drive, near Santa Monica, where all the studios are, and near Hollywood and Century City and all these fancy areas, right?
Yeah.
So when you're selling Lamborghinis in Beverly Hills, the equivalent of Beverly Hills, you don't have normal customers.
Right, right.
The people that can afford it, the minute you find somebody that can afford it, they got something going on. They're either famous, wealthy, own a huge business. Something's going on with them. And so very quickly, I get this job. It's just going to be a normal computer store job selling these fancy printers. Well, I've always been an artist. So I started out painting as a child, and I discover all these digital tools. So I have an entire room filled with, you know, $100,000 worth of stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I could use all this stuff. And they're like, yeah, go for it. So I took every lunch hour for 2 years, and I taught myself to be a graphic designer.
Oh, cool. Okay.
All the while, I'm closing color printers with all the big mucky mucks in LA.
Yeah.
And get this, one of them was O.J. Simpson.
Really?
I was working with O.J. Simpson's agency when the murder happened.
Oh, man.
My office was on Bundy Drive, the street of the murder. So I'm literally driving past a crime scene to and from work. Didn't know it, right? Like, it's all happened without me really even knowing it was happening. Except when I saw the Bronco going down the freeway, I'm calling my guy going, dude, what's going on? He goes, oh, the juice didn't do it, man. Don't worry about it. The juice didn't.
So you really are, when you say Forrest Gump, you're not kidding.
Yeah, yeah. And the other big Forrest Gump moment during that time period was Marlon Brando. So I'm selling a color printer to Marlon Brando. I take the printer to the Brando estate.
Mm-hmm.
Also right by where Chris lived, my buddy with the house on stilts over the mansion.
Yeah.
Brando is like his neighbor practically on the same street, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so I go to the Brando house. And behind the movie star gates for Brando is Warren Beatty and Jack Nicholson. Who knew?
Yeah.
And so there's three buzzers and this gigantic gate. And I go, buzz. And I get yelled at. Buzz. And I get yelled at. Third buzz. And Marlon Brando's like, come on in. And I'm like, okay. You didn't tell me which buzzer. There's three buzzers. I'm sorry. I bug people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you'd have told me you sold all three of them, then I would have been like, wait a minute.
Well, that would have been a closing. See, that would have been a closing move right there.
That's right. Yeah, hey, your neighbor just bought one.
Yeah, coffee's for closers, man. I didn't deserve coffee that day.
Except
for it. But anyway, so I get invited into this inner sanctum of Marlon Brando. I install this $8,000 color printer, which was a lot of money back then.
Oh, yeah.
But more than the machine costs, which is probably what, 20 grand in today's money? I mean, this is 30.
Yeah, those are pricey, yeah.
So it was pricey. But then get this, the ink was 2 grand.
That's right. They would get you on the ink on those things.
Yeah, the ink was crazy money. Yeah. Do you remember dye sublimation?
Oh, yeah. I had one of those.
Okay.
Although the plastic and the piece is good. Yeah, oh, yeah.
So this was the first dye sub printer.
Okay, yeah.
And it was a Tektronix phaser. I don't know if you remember phasers. But
I do.
So fancy color printer, right? And so people call me up and go, yeah, I got money. I want that printer. And I'm like, 2 grand for ink. And they're like, click.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if they stayed talking to me, I knew I had a hot prospect on the line, right?
That's right. That's right.
2 grand for ink. Are you ready? Are you still alive?
Still sitting. And I can't drive it. Wait a minute.
All over.
That's right.
So and get this. OJ was buying that printer. Marlon Brando did buy the printer. And get this. William Randolph Hearst Castle, his grandson, bought the printer.
Well, one of the printers. Wow.
I was like, the whole thing. I call them divine appointments. Yeah. This printer was my divine appointment engine.
Yeah.
Every time the phone rang, I was like, who is it, right? Like, who is it? I mean,
yeah.
it's a who's who. I mean, I sold. So during that time period, I landed the movie Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
So I became the graphic designer for James Cameron for the launch of the movie Titanic.
Oh, wow. Okay.
2 years later, I land Elvis Presley Enterprises, and I became the artist for the Graceland cookbook.
Wow. So now is this your company name now, or is this just you?
So this is the crazy part. So I had this day job. So I'm working at a computer store for 10 years.
Yeah.
And while I'm there, I have $100,000 worth of gear to land all these big clients.
Yeah.
I didn't own all that stuff, right? So I look like $1 million, and I have this gorgeous office. I actually designed the office, negotiating one of the coolest buildings in LA, and we had a ground floor signage on the building. I mean, it was nuts.
That's
the market
cool.
was so depressed, they gave this tiny little space on the ground floor signage on the building. And like nobody else had asked for it. I'm like, can I have a sign on the building? They're like, yeah.
Sure. Why not?
They didn't even put up a fight, you know?
Oh, that's cool. Very cool.
But yeah, so when I landed Titanic, I mean, they're seeing that office.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nice. We're talking like high rent.
Yeah.
And so so I did that for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And you know what killed it? 9/11.
All right.
9/11 was the death of that business.
Yeah.
It was a slow death, but it was the death of that business.
The printer copy business?
The printer company, yeah.
Plus, there was so much competition too, right? I mean, there was new stuff coming out all the time back then, right?
Well, I had an amazing run. Mm-hmm. I was the one or two top salesmen in the whole country for almost the whole time.
Sure.
But what happened was Xerox bought Tektronix, and they opened up the world.
Yeah.
So there used to be 5 dealers in LA, and I was the best. Now there's 50.
Oh.
And the internet. The internet just also was invented right around that time.
Yeah.
So not only did I have competition from every other vendor they opened up, but I had a competition from the internet.
Yeah.
So it was kind of the beginning of the end for that.
Yeah.
And so so I've had a studio now since 94.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I started freelancing as a designer in 94.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward, I get out of that business. I get into big digital printing presses. So now I'm moving up the food chain. So I get a job in a $4 billion company, and I have 35 sales reps. And it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Great experience, killer money. But then the crash of 08 hits.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. It changed my life.
It changed my life. And so I was like, I'm a fat cat, and I'm going to always make this kind of money. And 08 said, really? You're a kitten.
Wake up call. Knock, knock.
You're gonna suffer a bit.
Yeah.
And so eventually I end up in radio. Mm-hmm. I worked at a radio station. Crazy. Wasn't real good at selling airtime, but it was a great engine for cool opportunities.
Yeah.
And it kind of led me to where I'm at now.
Yeah.
So my best friend and I both worked at a radio station. Mm-hmm. He goes on to start a $60 million ad agency.
Wow. Crazy. Okay. Yeah.
I'm noodling around with my little tiny agency. And eventually I get fired from big Xerox. Mm-hmm. So my big six-figure job is gone.
Yeah.
And I call up my buddy, and he has this huge agency already. And I'm like, hey, can I come and have lunch? And he hangs up the phone. He goes, Dean's coming here to work on Monday.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I came in for lunch. I wanted food. They wanted me to work there. So my best friend kind of gave me this killer job.
Yeah.
And it was not a happy circumstance, right? This was not a good fit for me.
Yeah.
But it was like a brutal boot camp for 3 years.
Okay.
In 3 years, I worked on campaigns. Get this. One client, I did 2,000 pieces of art in 1 year for just one client. We had multiple clients. So it was like Krispy Kreme donuts of art. It was just crazy stuff and high volume, low quality.
Yeah.
That's not me.
Right.
I'm low volume, high quality.
Yeah.
And my son, who's my business partner and the greatest artist in the world, mm-hmm. he is now the master designer of my studio. And again, he's super high quality, beautiful stuff. So we're not that high volume, throw it against the wall kind of client.
Yeah, you do the high end stuff.
More of a higher end stuff. But then the big breakthrough a year ago, was my new business partner's name, Joel. And Joel is a CMO, chief marketing officer, where he goes into a bigger company and he oversees all the marketing spend.
Mm-hmm.
So when he and I met, it was like God had a plan, right? Like it was amazing because he doesn't want my job. I don't want his job.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So he doesn't want to be a high-end branding designer or web guy. And I don't really want to learn all the technical crazy things that he does.
Yeah.
So we started doing joint calls starting about a year, year and a half ago. And it just hit. Nice. We just landed our first national client, and we have a bunch of retainers now. So people hire us and they'll pay kind of a smaller amount as a retainer. Yeah. We come in, even if they have their own in-house marketing department.
We found that out too in the video
world. We come above them,
yep,
and make them heroes, right? Like we go, we're bringing skills to the table. Between my partner and I, we have 10 employees. Mm-hmm. So like I went from like a two-man show to 10 employees just in last year.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so we... We just collectively, between Joel and I, I've got 37 years of business experience. He has 40 years.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you just need an adult in the room. For the most part, most marketing agencies are fairly young.
Yeah.
No gray hair, and they've never carried a bag. That's what we call, you know, working the streets, knocking on doors.
That's right.
Carrying a bag. I've carried a bag for 30 years.
Yeah.
And so there's just things that you learn in the trenches. And most of our clients, right, are probably about our age, mm-hmm, and they carried a bag, and they want somebody that knows sales,
right,
as well as marketing, right?
Yeah, that is so exactly right.
I come at it as a journeyman sales guy, who also has a 30-year studio, and then my partner Joel has been marketing his full career, almost so 40 years. So between the two of us, we just can bring options, gravity, you know, like we can bring, we can illuminate things that maybe somebody else can't. And we don't want that in-house person's job.
Right, right.
We want to make that person a hero. We want to come alongside them and make them better.
Yeah.
And we are now this back office resource that they have.
Right. And that's, you know, that seems so popular nowadays. I mean, a lot of these gigantic companies, they'll come to our company just to like do pieces, parts, you know? Yeah. And just like you, you know, there's certain things that you just, this is what you do, you know, which I thought was pretty interesting how that's evolving now, you know?
Yeah. And so it's been really fun. I mean, one, you don't have all your eggs in one basket, right? So you can, there's a little bit of the risk is spread out. But more than that, so on the one side, there's a CMO contract, but on the other side, there's blocks of hours. And that's where I was talking to you, mm-hmm, is we might be able to partner with somebody like you or somebody that's listening where we bring you in as a resource to cover, to be a full, well-rounded resource. So my role in Fallon Studios is I'm the conductor of the orchestra.
Right.
And the piece of music that I'm conducting is whatever moves the needle.
Yeah, yeah.
So the problem is if I was just a web development agency and that's all I do, every single person I meet, unless if I don't sell them a website,
I'm done.
Right?
Exactly.
So when you're a hammer, everything's a nail, right?
Yeah,
so
everybody's
like, that website needs to be rebuilt. I'm like, I built it yesterday. It needs to be rebuilt again. We don't care, right? If you don't want a website, and more critically, if the website doesn't move the needle for you.
Right. Now that's key.
I would rather do an explainer video with you or a podcast or a landing page or something that is very targeted and that the lead generations can be attributed to my efforts.
Right. Yeah. You know, and we're finding that as well. You know, it's funny. People that are pigeonholed into one thing are only going to sell you one thing, whether it's right or wrong.
Right.
You know, I've seen that more and more where customers come into us and they're like, hey, well, this guy says, you know, a brochure is what we need to do. you know, and or postcard, you know,
Right,
and
right.
it's a printer salesman. Of course, they're going to say that. What do you expect?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, there are Joe's postcards.
Yeah, so you kind of have to really sit back and think. You're very much like the way we do it here. I mean, you got to come back and think about what the right answer for them is, not
Yeah.
necessarily the one that will make you the most money or the most
Right.
profit, you know. And it's hard for, and that comes with being a seasoned veteran, you know. You don't just
Right.
do that overnight.
Right. And
So,
one of our specialties is a lot of agencies get paid on spend,
yeah.
right? The more you spend, the more they
Yeah.
make because they take
Right.
a percentage of it. Well, we found a client recently that was getting ripped. He's spending, $5,000 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
He has no idea. He goes, I don't know how they do it. They basically don't charge me any money. Like,
Yeah,
well,
they do.
they're spending maybe $2,000
Yeah.
on your spend. And because it was, and then they don't give them access to anything.
Yeah,
There's
that's
no, he has
exactly
no
it.
idea. There's no dashboard. There's no accountability. So
Yeah.
for all he knows, they've been spending $1,000 and keeping $4,000 in their pocket.
Exactly.
So
Exactly.
what we did is we go, look, pay us a reasonable retainer.
Yeah.
We become your chief marketing officer. So anything new and shiny, bring it to us. Let us evaluate it. We don't see new shiny thing, cool thing out here as competition.
Right.
Let us
Right.
manage it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
so we look at the whole, we have the 30-mile view. And what we discovered is that this company was screwing him. And we just, and so now we don't mark up his spend. He just goes and puts his credit card on Google and he spends what he spends.
Right,
We get paid separately. And so consequently, if something's not working, it's, if I was getting paid on spend, my job is to keep you in things that don't work or I'm cutting my fee.
yeah.
Right. So if everything you spend money on is I'm getting a markup or that's the only way I make money, then it behooves me to keep you in a sinking ship
Yeah, it's
as opposed
unfortunate.
to a CMO who has a fiduciary responsibility to you, the business owner,
Right.
where I'm on, and what we like to say is we're on your side of the desk.
Yeah.
Whereas most agency relationships, they're in this adversarial other side of the desk. No, I'm on your side. I'm looking at your money like I would look at my own.
Yeah.
And I have no reason to spend your money in a irresponsible fashion.
Right. It's
And
trust factor
that
too.
came about, I was like, right? Because I'm a
Yeah.
faith guy, right? I don't want to lie to people. I don't want to keep them in a bad situation,
Yeah,
right?
that's exactly right.
I want to be able to wear the white hat and ride the white stallion and be the hero.
Right.
And so have you heard of StoryBrand?
I have not. What's that?
So Donald Miller, anybody listening or watching, Donald Miller wrote a book called Building a StoryBrand, and it uses the language of film and screenwriting to create customer journeys. And it is brilliant. It really is. And the whole philosophy is he uses Star Wars as the example. So our customer is Luke Skywalker. We, the guides who know a little bit more, we're like Obi-Wan Kenobi, and you could be Yoda. Okay, you're Yoda. I'm Obi-Wan. Sorry, I picked it.
Sorry.
Hey, but Yoda was a badass. Remember when he did the whole thing? Okay.
Oh, yeah, he lifted the
Yeah.
lightsaber.
He's small but mighty.
That's
Okay.
right.
But anyway, so we're the guides and the customer is the hero. And they're on this heroic journey,
Right.
right? And so both my clients are the hero and I'm the guide. But then collectively, if they're a service provider, they're the guy. And their customer, somebody visiting their website, landing page, explainer video, that's the hero.
Yeah.
And the thing is that there's real consequences to making a bad buying decision,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So you need to communicate that and use the language of film, the language of a storyline. And it's fun. Like if you go to foundstudios.com, that whole journey is story branded.
Yeah,
It's
yeah.
called a brand script. And it's a book, it's a university. He's written, I think, two or three bestsellers. He's incredible and a
That is
very
so
easy
cool.
read. And what I like about him is coming from the position of I don't want to be that manipulative, sleazy marketer. he comes at it from the same angle.
Okay, good.
And I was like ready to quit going, okay, everybody's a lying, cheating piece of garbage. And I don't want to be that, right? So I guess I got to go find another job. And StoryBrand was that aha moment.
Yeah.
Where I went, oh, if I can be honoring to the customer journey, make them the hero.
Yeah.
And I'm the guide. There's honor in that, right? There's respect.
Sure.
No, I can sleep at night.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's been a real eye opener.
Very
and
nice.
His university is called Business Made Simple.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, how could people reach you and
Yeah, sure. Well, foundstudios.com. My email is deanc@foundstudios.com. Mm-hmm. And I'd be honored to talk to anybody. And anybody watching this, I'd be happy to give you like, half hour, 45 minutes for free to consult and not selling anything, just really just sharing what's going to move the needle for you.
That's key. That really is.
Right. And so right now you said video is like a huge component. Tell me a little bit about what are all the video things that you're doing?
Yeah. It's funny. We're finding that these, like you, there are these gigantic companies that have these holes in their organization and they're having a problem. And you can never tell by looking at me right now, if you're watching the video, we do the video, right? I'm not a black blob that's bouncing around here. So anyway, it's really weird. They come to us for just pieces, parts, like their internal staff can't make a video on time. They can't, they can't develop. So they'll send us a series of videos to do for them. And then we also work with small to medium sized ones as well. So, but I think the whole thing, like you were mentioning, it's all about relationships, building relationships with your customer. So they trust you, and I think that's really key in any environment, when dealing with that. So what advice would you have to someone starting out in your industry right now?
Sure. Well, one of the things, and I'll give you my Titanic story real quick, because it really illustrates one of the key things. Mm-hmm. So if God, I'll give God the credit, if God presents you with an unbelievable opportunity, okay, you need to leave blood on the keyboard. Okay. You need
great
to do
advice. Everything.
Even if you don't make one dime, even if you pay thousands of dollars, if you have that one break, you cannot let that go. And so I was minding my own business, selling color printers in LA, not a glamorous job. Nobody's going, ooh, tell me more about this printer sale thing that you do. Nobody's impressed by that. But what I used to do, and I still do, is I collect creatives. I love creatives. I hang out with creatives. That's my friend group. That's my people, right? And so I meet this young guy. He's a techno wizard in Hollywood. He works at a big studio. And we became friends a few years earlier. So get this. Talk about an amazing rags to riches story. Only could happen in Hollywood. So Brett is working at the very first motion capture studio that exists in the whole world. It's called House of Moves. Still in business. Okay, mm-hmm. Vicon is the inventor of motion capture. Do you know what motion capture is?
A vague idea.
I'll explain it for the group. Okay.
Yeah.
So picture a stuntman putting on a bodysuit, black latex spandex bodysuit, and all over the suit are Velcroed reflective balls.
Right.
At every key joint. Right. Ball. And then now it's so sophisticated, they put little dots all over your face.
Whoa.
So now they can capture your facial performance as well.
Yeah.
So picture this. You're a stuntman or an actor or an actress. You're in a stage and it's surrounded by cameras with ring lights on them. Mm-hmm. Each camera is hitting those balls. It's coming back to the camera and it's recording your performance in 3D space.
Wow.
So after you did your thing, if you saw it on the screen, it would look like a skeleton.
Yeah.
Just look like little balls, right?
Yeah.
It would have no body. It would have no form. So motion capture is exactly like what it sends. It's capturing a digital performance in 3D space. You could rotate around it. You can do anything, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what they would do then is they had a 360 camera where the actor would stand in this tube and a camera would go.
I remember that.
It would spin around them and take a picture of every side of them. Mm-hmm. So especially if they were wearing like a cool costume like Titanic, yeah, right? It would capture all. And then so now you have a body.
Uh-huh.
Right? You already have the movement. Now you have a body that you can then wrap around or attach to that digital puppet performance.
Yeah.
So my buddy Brett works at this studio. Life is great. He's got this killer job. And he gets a call from Canada. And the people who are funding the studio, they build this $1 million stage and all this cool stuff. They call him up and they go, oh, you and the sales guy, you're fired. He goes, they go, yeah, we're defunding the studio and packing it up and going back to Canada. See you later. Oh, and wow. So these two unemployed guys are sitting in a $1 million studio.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And one of the salesmen calls up his dad, who's one of the top lawyers in California,
mm-hmm,
maybe in the country. It's a big global $1 billion law firm.
Yeah.
He calls his dad up. He goes, Dad, I just lost my job. Can we buy the studio? And dad says, yes.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
He turns to Brett, my buddy, and goes, hey, how'd you like to co-own it with me?
Wow.
Talked about discovered, right? Like in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Brett goes from no money, no family connections, to owning a Hollywood studio.
Wow.
That literally is across the street from James Cameron, where they just happen to be filming the Titanic.
Uh-huh.
And Titanic just happens to need motion capture. So when the ship goes up like this in Titanic,
yeah,
and you see people rolling down,
yeah,
bouncing off things, that was a real person. It was two or three stuntmen over and over and over again acting as human pinballs.
Oh, rolling
down the deck of a real, like they built what looked like a real ship.
Ship, yeah.
And wow. It's inverted on the stage and they're jumping off this part of it. So they're capturing them falling through space.
Yeah.
Rolling down the deck and bouncing off things. So those poor guys, right? These stuntmen really earn their money because they're like, take 50.
Oh, right? Yeah. Right.
They need to have a lot of people rolling down the deck.
Right. Now that was your first client there? Or what was the...
So I'm minding my own business,
mm-hmm,
at a little computer store, and my buddy is doing the motion capture for Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
2 months before the movie comes out, he calls me up and he goes, hey, you did my logo. So when they first did the studio, I did his logo, his business card, and a flyer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Didn't think anything of it. They were, you know, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
And I get a call maybe a year or I don't even know how long later. And he goes, hey, do you think you could work on my Titanic ad? And there's a magazine called Cinefex. Cinefex is the Bible of the CGI world.
Yeah.
And Cinefex, they're buying these $10,000 full page ads, bragging about their association with this fancy movie.
Yeah.
And the whole issue of Cinefex, normally it has four movies that are featured. The entire issue is Titanic.
Wow.
So this is the issue to be in, right?
Yeah, right.
I'm looking at it right now. It's issue 72. You can still order it.
Wow.
And it's Cinefex issue 72 dedicated to Titanic.
Mm.
And it was 1997.
Mm. So. Mm.
25 years. And so consequently, so they're going to be in this fancy magazine. They need artwork. So they call me up and I go, what's Titanic? They go, oh, it's James Cameron's next movie. And I'm like, literally, that was when the clouds parted and the rays came out and the angels sang. I'm like, this is it.
Yeah.
Right? Remember I told you, leave blood on the keyboard?
Yeah.
This is my break and I know it.
Yeah.
I know it. There's nothing bigger than James Cameron. He'd already done Terminator, mm-hmm, Abyss. This is the guy, right? I mean, yeah. I have my name associated with the biggest guy in Hollywood. So
yeah.
I designed this ad, and the ad turns out gorgeous, mm-hmm, right? And my buddy walks it into James Cameron's guy and goes, here's my ad. Can you approve it? Just walks across the street, hands this guy artwork.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, who's your artist? I might want to work with him.
There's right? relationship right there. Yeah,
exactly. It's so
nice.
He calls me back. He goes, "You're in." Like, what does that mean?
And it happens that fast, you know. And so, yeah. So that's, you know, telling someone that's just getting into the business, those opportunities are there, right?
Yeah. And so what the crazy thing was, so the next week, Vicon, who actually invented motion capture and has the cameras,
yeah,
they saw the ad and they called me up and go, "We want to hire you to do a second full page ad in Cineplex." So
nice.
Now I get to go into James Cameron's studio. I get to meet the guy that already likes me. And there's the capsule from Apollo 13. There's the wall from Fifth Element. There's all this cool stuff in the studio, right?
Nice.
And I'm like a tourist. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And so I'm driving home. Well, first of all, he goes, "I liked your work. I might want to use you." I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm driving home from that appointment. I'm going, oh my gosh, the guy likes me. What do I do? What can I do? What can I do to really close this deal?
Yeah.
So luckily I have $100,000 worth of gear back at the studio, right? Mm-hmm. And at that point I was selling wide format printers.
Yeah.
So I could make my own movie poster. Mm-hmm. And so I took the ad from House of Moves, the ad from Vicon, and I made it into a 3-foot by 4-foot poster.
Yeah.
And on the poster, it took my logo and then made it the same size as Titanic's.
Nice.
I mean, like, elevated myself, right?
Yeah.
Player. Like, I'm just a kid in a store.
Yeah.
But I said, "Thanks for the astounding images. Remember me." And it's this huge Titanic poster. And I rolled it up and I sent it to the studio. He called me up instantly and said, "Nobody has done a private one-off movie poster for me ever.
Yeah.
You're hired."
There you go. You went that extra step.
That one crazy thing that nobody would think of, and nobody had the gifts or the tools or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I went farther than that. I went and bought a $2,700 computer to build the Titanic ad. So I, you know what I mean? Like,
lead, you're all in.
Lead work, right?
You're all in.
I knew this was it. And then I got to go into the studio and I got to ask for something from Titanic that nobody else could get. And so I asked for blueprints. And he goes, "You can't have the blueprints from the ship." I'm like, "Can you ask? Go ask." I mean, you know, I'm your guy, right? I work for you now. So let's do something special that nobody else can do. And so I go back to my office across town and my secretary goes, "Digital Domain is in the lobby." So that's the name of the studio. Digital Domain is James Cameron and Scott Ross from ILM that did Star Wars. It's a super group studio. And so I go into my lobby of my office and there's a runner from the studios with armfuls of blueprints.
Wow.
You don't ask, you don't get.
Exactly right. Exactly
right?
Right. That's
so now I'm really blessed. I have blueprint. I have a historic blueprint that's 9 feet long, 3 feet high. And I had one of the world's first digital cameras and I shot this blueprint in 24 sections.
Yeah.
Stitched it together in Photoshop, mocked up this ad, and then delivered it.
Nice.
And and this is the craziest story. He sees the ad and he starts running. The head of marketing for James Cameron starts running through the office going, "The kid did it. The kid did it." And he's walking into executive's office and going, "Take a look at that." And he's throwing the artwork down in front of all the executives. And I'm standing behind him going, "I'm the kid."
You got it, man. That is awesome.
I mean, it was like the craziest thing.
Yeah.
Nobody does that. Nothing's normal in Hollywood.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that same guy was F-bombed me just a week later. So you never know.
You never know. Just ride that wave, right?
Well, I rode the wave. I got the brownie point. I'm good.
And you
I would encourage people, one, you need to get mad skills.
Yeah.
Your skills up. So I took years. And I had mad skills.
Yeah.
And Photoshop, Illustrator. Back then it was Quark Express. Yeah. Now I would say AI. You need mad skills in AI.
That's exactly right.
Skills in ChatGPT. You need mad skills in Photoshop, Illustrator, WordPress, Elementor. These are the things that I use every single day for every client.
Right, right.
Not AI necessarily. I have done my third job using AI.
Yeah.
And I work with a global nonprofit. They gave me a low-res picture of this child who we're supposed to be raising money for in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a horrible picture. It's a screen capture from a video.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't a good video to begin with. And this is the low-res screen capture
of
a bad video.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to take it into Photo Leap on an iPhone.
Yeah.
And it rebuilt this child's face.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
In a high-res.
Yeah.
And then I was rebuilt part of his body in Midjourney.
Mm-hmm.
And so between those two, I have a real photo that I can use in this global campaign.
Wow. That's fantastic, man.
But anyways, I know I've taken some time, but thank you so much for the opportunity to share.
I really appreciate it.
I can be honored to talk to young artists starting out. If you want tips, I've got them. Business owners or anybody that would happen to listen to this, we'd be honored to serve however led. And if you have in-house people, like we play well with strangers, we definitely have skills and services that your in-house people do not have or maybe don't even know exist.
Right.
And
right.
So we're just about making everybody better and being a blessing where we're called.
That is fantastic. Well, I got to tell you, your story has been really inspiring, and I hope a lot of people enjoy, you know, and are able to learn from it, which is great. So, well, I really appreciate you being on. And one more time, where can people reach you again?
FoundStudios.com, DeanC@FoundStudios.com. My phone number is on my website. There's also an appointment button everywhere on my website that goes directly to my calendar. That's the best, really. Book a meeting, and it'll be a Zoom call, and come for the story, stay for the graphics. I don't know.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, great. Well, thanks everybody for listening in on this, and we look forward to seeing you on our next episode. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Let's face it, everybody loves to make podcasts and vodcasts, but nobody wants to edit them. Well, except for us. At Premier Podcast Productions, we professionally edit and distribute podcasts and vodcasts for companies around the world. Our process is simple and affordable, allowing you to stay focused on what you do best, developing great content and building your subscriber base. From recording and editing to final distribution and marketing, we can help every step of the way to make your podcast stand out and get the results it deserves. Contact us today at PremierPodcastPros.com to take your podcast to the next level.